Hey, hey, I'm your host, the Dr. Danko, come on in. You've been missing out, so let's begin. Oh, Pumpkin underscore Crumb is your host here too. When you hear the beat, you know what to do. Why didn't you warn me? Why didn't you warn me now? Why didn't you warn me? Why didn't you warn me? Hey.
You're not going to have my full attention.
That's fine.
Okay.
I have to do the introduction anyway.
That's true.
Good evening and welcome to Why Did Not You Warn Me? I'm your host, Matthew, the Dr. Danko.
And I'm Groot.
She is Hillary Crumb, my co-host, who is actively involved in, what would you, restocking?
I'm stuffing a Pez dispenser.
Yes.
With Pez. I'm not, you know, just fucking everything. I told you, you were not going to have my full attention I was done with this.
That was the plan. It's totally fine.
Okay, great. I'm almost done. It's not rocket science.
No. Well, no. That's not rocket. That's Groot.
I'm done with
So, you. We were at Aldi the other day, and my mom was helping us, like, buy groceries and whatnot, and we just casually, thank you, mentioned that, you know, oh, it's Marvel Pez dispensers, and she was like, we'll get one.
She was like, I was going to pick one up for you, but I assumed you guys already had one.
Which is fair, but nice.
Fresh.
So, I don't know if the sound quality is any different, but we are recording in our kitchen.
We did that last week.
I know, but we had all the windows shut last week.
That's true.
Just because it's way cooler out here than it is in that room. Also, I have a lot of projects dispersed.
All over that desk.
Yeah, just all over the place.
Right, not that he has a man cave, because we're not that kind of couple.
No.
But that's his project space, mostly.
Yeah, I mean,
a bunch of my books are in there,
yeah,
too. It's like, just a room that we don't use very often.
Right. And there's a desk in there, so like I can hold all my project stuff, and I do go in there occasionally, but I do like to sit out here in the living room and like watch television
and
stuff.
There's a 4-foot-tall Batman in there.
Yes, I do, because they were...
I said, there's a 4-foot-tall Batman, and you said, yes, I do.
No, you said I have.
No.
Well, I have. yes, I do.
The record will show.
Play back the tapes. No, so Toys R Us, you know, they're going out of business, which is very sad for me. But they, you know, everything's discounted, and one of my friends noticed that one of the Toys R Us in South Hills, had the 4-foot-tall Jack Specific Batman that I was looking for. Now, to anyone who knows me, they'd think, oh, you want it because it's a Batman thing.
Right.
But my whole thing with that was I was going to use it for a custom of a character called Galactus, which is from the Marvel Universe, who, like, is super large and he eats planets and shit. And they released, like, a Marvel Legends-type Build-A-Figure where you have to buy, like, 6 other action figures in order to build the main action figure, which is Galactus in this case. And it costs, like, $100. And it's probably about 1 foot tall because you build it and it's, you know, it's not super large and it doesn't really...
You're so cool.
...scale with the rest of the figures. So I was like, they make those huge-ass figures. I could take one of those.
Huge-ass figures.
Yes.
Delightful.
I know. I could take one of those and make it into a Galactus and have it be in scale with my Marvel Legends, and it would be super cool. My other thought was, even before thinking of Galactus, that I would get one of those large figures and make a Giant Man out of it. That way, again, they made a Giant Man build a figure. It's not to scale, so you can't, like, fit War Machine in his hands like in the movie. So I figured I'd get one of those, make a Giant Man, have it on my shelf, and, like, I could set up a little scene if I wanted to, and then I'd have Galactus, the 4-foot-tall version, like, looming over everyone, which would be super cool. So that's what I'm using that for. It's not just because I like Batman.
Although you do want to design the Galactus thing, whatever.
Galactus. I've
like
said it so many times.
I don't listen. You said that you wanted to design that so that you can take it off so that you could have the Batman.
So, like, when I was originally looking for it, like, I contacted the company and was like, what other characters do you make, like, the 4 foot tall versions of? And they're like, well, we only have these figures and you can't really buy them anywhere because we're discontinuing them. And I was like, well, I missed my chance. And the Batman is like, all those tall 4 foot figures were like $100 and up. And because they're discontinued, they've gone up in price everywhere online. And plus, you know, shipping and handling, like, that's a huge figure that doesn't like come apart. So I would have to pay an extraordinary amount of money for something that I don't really want in that capacity. But then when I found it at that Toys R Us, when my friend found it, I was like, shit, yeah, $15? Obviously. Shit, yeah. So my thought is, well, not only should I make it a Galactus figure, but I should customize it in a way where I can take off the Galactus armor, make it into a Giant Man, and take off and like switch out from Giant Man to Galactus to even Batman. Because,
but you got another thing that you want to make into Giant Man, because we had to like swerve to pull the car over because you saw that goddamn stormtrooper that somebody was throwing away.
Yeah, it's like a 20-inch tall stormtrooper. But my thought process is, so when like I'm not switching anything around, I could have Galactus, and then I could have a slightly smaller Giant Man on display that's sort of still in scale, but like I don't have to choose between having a Giant Man and Galactus.
Gotcha.
And also, I sort of had written off finding that 4 foot tall Batman anywhere.
Right.
So when I saw that one for free on the side of the road, I was like, shit, yeah. Swerved the car over.
Quite an afternoon.
I know. There was a lot of other stuff going on. But yeah. So, like,
I was sick.
Probably.
I've been sick forever. Yeah. I had been. I'm not anymore.
I had to jump on it.
Literally.
Yeah. So I'll have a Galactus that I can swap out to be Giant Man. And with the new Ant-Man and Wasp movie coming out, he's supposedly even larger than he was in Civil War. So it'll all make sense.
Great.
And nobody's done it before, which is surprising because, like, those figures are huge, and like anybody who makes customs online would probably like figure, oh, I could just take this and make it into a scale Galactus or whatever, but I don't know.
That was just one of those things where I looked into our spare room and didn't know that was in there. Just a little startling. Like,
but I
out of,
told you about it
you
beforehand.
You told me that somebody had found it for you. I didn't know that it was actively living with us.
Yeah, but it's not like taking up the entire room.
It wasn't as bad as the time I thought you were down at the car getting something, and the apartment was dark, and I turned and you were in the spare room with the light off, and I actually screamed.
Well, my hands were full. I was bringing in a vacuum cleaner. And no, I thought you heard me come through.
No.
I ended up scaring you accidentally. I'm sorry.
You're selfish.
But it's over. Did you die?
Yes. 8 years ago. Rose has been dead for 8 years.
All right. So what have you been up to this week? What have you been reading, listening to, watching? Any of those things.
I started watching Riverdale, but I think I'm going to wait until I get through one season to talk about it.
That's fair. I'm super curious about it.
I'm 4 episodes in, and it's wild. Yeah. It's like Teen Wolf meets Pretty Little Liars.
Yeah. And it's CW, right?
I have no idea. Probably. I think so. It's improbably attractive teenagers, so it seems like a CW thing. But I'm not going to talk about that. I read Just Another Kid by Tori, I want to say Hayden is her last name. Okay. I never know this.
Yeah,
I really should look these up first. I know her name's Tori because the story is autobiographical and she refers to herself. So Tori Hayden, maybe, is a teacher. The book is called Just Another Kid. And she's written a bunch of books about teaching because she primarily focused her work on emotionally disturbed children, which is rough.
Yeah.
She apparently did like a whole huge project on elective mutism in elementary aged kids, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
But this one, like, it. So my problem with the book was that based on the synopsis on the back, it sounded like it was going to be, you know, her journey through the school year with these kids. These kids that were tough to deal with. Three of the ones in her classroom were, like, from Northern Ireland and had been sort of, like, taken out because their parents had died in the violence, and mm-hmm. it was just, yeah, so there was a lot going on with these kids.
Yeah.
But the main focus of the book was her relationship with the parents of one of the kids, this other woman who had a ton of emotional problems of her own, but every time we started interacting with this woman, Tori just talked about how beautiful she was. And there was one scene where she's like, and I put my hand on her arm, just looked at each other, and I'm like, what? Are we, is that, what? And it was so weird because, like, there would be a chapter all about, you know, the struggles in the classroom, and then we would go back to, and, you know, she called me drunk in the middle of the night, and I had to go pick her up, and we're dealing with her alcoholism and her problems Jeez. With her family, and I'm like, so Just Another Kid, the title, refers yeah. to the fact that this woman is basically just another one of the kids
huh.
that ends up looking at Tori as this, like, guiding figure. And I had read this book before, but not for many years. My mom recommended it to me because, you know, my mom's a special educator. Or yeah, she yeah. was. And, she, you know, she read another book by this woman. I think Beautiful Child was the yeah. one that she read. Because, you know, my mom had a similar interest in, she never wanted to work with the kids that were easy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that. I'm just fine working with easy kids. Yeah, but so the book was just really weird, and I wanted way more. I wanted her to delve way more into working with the children.
Right.
Yeah, she just seemed like kind of an unremarkable person dealing with some weird shit, very matter-of-factly. And I'm like, uh-huh. this is a weird thing to write a book about.
Yeah, have you read anything else by that author?
No. And I only picked it up now because I am back in the classroom after
right.
a while. And, you know, I knew it wasn't infants or even young children that the book was about, but,
yeah.
you know, just getting me back in the mindset of teaching.
No.
Yeah, it was just weird.
It's upsetting, though, that it wasn't, like, what you thought it was going to be.
Right, and, yeah, like,
and
I had read
took
it before, and
the
I
rails
just had
there.
No memory of anything at all that happened in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, usually stuff that I read, you know, in like, early adolescence, I can remember, mm-hmm. you know, some basic ideas, but I couldn't remember, like, any of the kids or even the fact that this other woman existed. Like, must have been just something my 11 to 12 year old brain just didn't really process.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so that was weird. Yeah, and I'll talk about Riverdale next week.
So just for those of you who aren't familiar, Riverdale is the town in which the Archie comic book characters live.
Worth mentioning, because I had no idea that that's what it was about until Jughead showed up, and then I was like, wait a minute.
Right, like the old school 50s style, like, comic book. I want to say it started in the newspapers.
I think it's a newspaper comic.
I know, I mean, I know it has a current, even, comic book run.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Archie himself once met the Punisher in an really? Issue. Yeah. It was really fucking weird.
That seems really
And there's an even, like, it's not, I don't think it's canon in the Archie universe, but it's like one of those, like how DC does, like, Elseworlds comics, where it's
right.
like taking the characters and putting them in another situation. But
yeah,
there's
yeah.
like Afterlife with Archie, where Archie, either Archie is dead and comes back to life as a zombie, or everyone he knows is a zombie, and it's still like the same sort of story, but just living. They didn't. A comic book in the canon series where Archie dies.
Huh.
Like, and, like, they have their own albums. I have one of the vinyl records of the Archie band where it's, like, them on the cover of it. And I thought maybe that that's where it originated, where it was, like, a band that they, like, made cartoons of all the
right.
people in the
like
band.
The,
but no, it's
yeah.
literally, like, the comic book characters. They decided to make an album for it. Archie was huge.
That's so weird.
I know.
I missed that entirely. But also, like, yeah, so Riverdale opens, and it's, like, a weird murder mystery in a small town.
Yeah.
There's a character named Archie, and there's Betty, and there's Veronica. And I was like, these characters have really old-fashioned names.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
Cheryl. I'm like, weird.
Well,
whatever.
Like, Archie's biggest problem in the comic book series was, like, who am I going to be with, Betty or Veronica? And, like, Jughead would always chime in with shit, and then there was, like, the school principal that, like, was always getting at them for doing crazy shit. But,
yeah.
like, Archie... His biggest problem in life was, like, do I want to date Betty or do I want to date Veronica? Like, Veronica's like more the girl next door, whereas Betty is the... No, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Betty is more of the girl next door, and Veronica's like the stuck-up popular girl that like is into shopping and all that shit, and they just fight over Archie all the time.
She's that like, does not seem to be the plot of Riverdale. Good. Thank God. My best friend, Devin, watched Riverdale, and she kept telling me, like, this show is wild in the crazy way. Like, she and I watched Teen Wolf together, and I say together. She lives in Florida, and she did while we were watching Teen Wolf as well, and we would just, like, text each other while we were watching it and be like, what the actual fuck is happening? How are all of these teenagers so attractive?
Yeah.
And wear jaguars, and then we stop watching.
I totally get that.
We're jaguars.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. So I like live text to Devin while I'm watching. And yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things. Like, I just finished watching Gilmore Girls again, so I need something to watch while you're at work.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was watching Gilmore Girls with you again.
Yeah, but like sporadically.
I'd pop in every time, like I'd come back.
Yeah, it's not super plot dependent.
No, and I mean, I've seen it all the way through one time. Right. It's a good show. Like, it has its moments.
I love Gilmore Girls. It's the comfort food of television.
Right.
Yeah.
But I walked in and you were watching Riverdale. And in my head, I was like, is she watching Teen Wolf? And then you're like, I'm watching Riverdale. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
And you walked in with like 2 minutes left. Yeah. So I just kept telling you, give me seconds.
Which I get, because, you know, I came in at a bad time, like, you were almost finished with the episode.
Because the episodes sort of start and end with this weird narration, and it's so capital D dramatic, and like...
Yeah.
Like, we think that Buffy's dramatic, but Buffy at least is dramatic. Campy, like...
Yeah, but I don't
the
know...
The angel stuff, we'll get to that.
I don't know how campy it was meant to be. I mean, I know it's Joss Whedon, and he has that sort of style, but, like, the drama that comes out of it is not...
Anytime Buffy and Angel are on screen together, it's not campy.
Yeah.
It's just insufferable. But the other characters are campy.
Yeah.
And Angel is starting to get there. Like, he's had one or two just, like, really good one-liners.
Yes. It's amazing.
So what have you been watching?
So I still can't get the Batman Ninja movie to work, but I think whatever I have to do to my computer to get it to work, the timing is going to work out, because they just asked me to be on an episode of the GTAS podcast.
You're so popular.
No, it's just because Adam is going to be out of state, so
I need somebody to fill in. Pez.
Yes. No, but so I'll try to watch it and then talk about it on that show, so that not only do I spare you from those details, but
I don't have to hear about Batman.
I have some time to work it out.
Fucking God.
But in the meantime, so Arrested Development has come back for season 5 on Netflix, and there's only 8 episodes, which I didn't know. I thought they would have done the thing that Netflix normally does, especially with their original series, where they just drop an entire season.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this season's only 8 episodes, or if they wanted to spread it out a little bit.
Okay.
But, like, I've talked about Arrested Development before. So it was on Fox, and then it was canceled. It was fighting for ratings a long time, and then it was canceled after season 3. But even back then, Arrested Development was more so a Netflix show, what we call Netflix shows now, because it was very much like you could sit and binge watch all of it, and binge watching it actually helped to get a lot of the jokes more, because they do running gags, sometimes it's in the background, or like visual gags that they just keep repeating, but like watching it from week to week, it sort of loses it, whereas when it came to Netflix and you could go back and rewatch it, I mean, I still watch seasons 1 through 3 and find things that I didn't catch the first time, because it's so intricate and...
It's like the movie Holes.
Amazing. Well, no. It's not.
In the intricacy. Not in anything else.
Maybe.
Whatever.
But it's just... It's the way it's written and the way that, like, they've formed these stories. It's that it's just so, like, if you blink, you miss it. And so when season 4 happened... That's where they, you know, couldn't get everyone in at the same time. So there's a lot of green screen stuff where they have characters coming in and out of the episode, and like episodes are more centered around one person's story, whereas the original episodes were like an all-inclusive story that you would bounce around to characters. And a lot of people didn't like season four, so much so that they went back and recut it to make it like right. the original series. But then season five happens, and it, obviously it picks up where season four ended. But so the show relies a lot on the narrator, mm-hmm. who is Ron Howard, the guy. He was Opie on the Andy Griffith Show, and like, what's his name? Not Ronnie. I can't remember his first name. Cunningham from the Happy Days. Useless. No, it's, you might recognize him. He just directed the last Star Wars movie, Solo.
That I also fine. Have no interest in.
Right.
Striking but, out. Moving on.
But he is a character on the show as well.
Okay.
And there's this whole plot where Michael Bluth was trying to get the rights to his family's likenesses so he can make a movie about them. Mm-hmm. And Ron Howard's set to produce and direct it. So there's a whole through line with that. But there's another plot where Michael Cera's character is dating Ron Howard's daughter. And Michael Bluth, Michael Cera's father.
This is a lot.
Jason Bateman.
Ugh.
He's the father figure to Michael Cera in the show. He is also dating Ron Howard's daughter, and they don't know it, and there's like this whole mix up that happens, and it the plot is really good, but I'm losing you on it.
Yeah.
I can see it in your eyes.
anytime Jason Bateman comes up, you've lost me.
Jesus Christ.
No,
he's
Jason
a great
Bateman.
Actor. You just don't like him for the reason you shouldn't like half of the white men in Hollywood. Not like the sexual scandals, but just because he's a what do you call him?
A put upon white man.
A put upon white man. That's what every story
every
in Hollywood.
Character I've ever seen him play.
Okay,
which
but
isn't many. I've seen him in like three movies.
Right,
but
he's a white man. So that's it.
I watched like four episodes of Arrested Development, maybe, and I was done. I was absolutely over it.
Yeah, because you can't get past the like the.
Once you become a crazy social justice person,
yeah.
it's very difficult to live your life as though you have not had all of these revelations.
Right, but it shouldn't.
It shouldn't ruin things.
It shouldn't take away from the show, because it's not like the show is actively being anti-social justice. It's,
right. It's not racist or sexist, or as far as I got in four episodes.
No,
just
but like the way the characters are designed. Right. Well, yeah, but that's they live in OC in California, like,
so
and
they're
a bunch of rich
there.
People. No, like it's a rich family that was embezzling money in their own company, and like they don't care about anyone else, and it's just like
I'm glad you enjoy it.
Not the point I'm trying to make here.
I don't know what you're trying to say.
I'm trying to say season five is good.
Great.
Let's move on. Other than that, because Devin has let us borrow her Hulu account.
Yeah, thanks, Devin.
I'm able to watch the show Peep Show, which is way dirtier than it sounds.
It's dirtier than it sounds?
It's not as dirty as it sounds. Yeah, it's super
so
dirty, and I just watch it.
Because you're a pervert.
Yeah, exactly.
a secret pervert.
Right.
A servant.
So, the show Peep Show is basically like an Odd Couple type scenario where like two guys that probably wouldn't be friends in any other circumstance are friends. Like one's a slob and doesn't take responsibility for things, and the other one's uptight and like responsible.
Odd Couple was the year before you went to Utah Shakes, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But like it was also a television show, and
I know.
Okay.
But the Utah Shakespeare Festival,
yeah,
we both
they
worked
did.
For 2 years. They did
yeah,
that
yeah.
way.
And I heard it was awesome.
The two artistic directors took turns playing each role, and like there were certain shows where they would flip a coin before they went on.
Yeah,
yeah.
And like just go out and play that
yeah.
role, which is super cool.
Yeah, that's all I know about the Odd Couple. I know that the set was a bitch and a half to build.
Well, they all were.
Yeah.
Tavern. anyway. So this show is that, but the unique part about it, because it's a comedy and these guys are like a comedy duo in Britain, so like it's a British show.
Fry and Laurie.
sort of, but like, you know.
Contemporary?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was pudging my mouth.
The show is all done from point of view. So, like, anytime a character is talking to somebody, if the character, like, they switch literally between a handheld point of view, so it's always from somebody's point of view. And also, they do this thing where they go inside the character's head, and it's only those two characters that they get inside their heads. Okay. So, like, they're having a normal conversation, but then you can hear the thoughts that they're having inside that's, like, completely opposite of what they're actually doing, because...
Like the most recent episode of Buffy that we watched.
Not really, but sort of, I guess.
I'm trying so hard.
You're trying to relate to it, but it's like...
But I just can't.
You know, like...
I know
I'm trying to give an example, like...
I know what you're saying. It's not a difficult concept. I was just trying.
It's not like they're acting. It's that they're, you know, you can hear their innermost secrets. So, like, when they're in a situation that they're uncomfortable with, they purport... or.
Why did not you warn me?
Yeah, they make themselves seem normal, but inside they're, like, having a nervous breakdown.
Oh, okay.
And it just, it carries on through. I think they have, like, 8 seasons. Maybe 9 was the most recent season. But the stories are just really good, and I can't really give an example of the most recent episodes I've watched, because I've sort of had it on the background, because I've watched it so many times by this point that I can just pop in and out.
That's what I do with Gilmore Girls.
Yeah. But, like, it's just, it's, I've been wanting to watch it for a while, and I've had it on my hard drive, but then my hard drive died, so I haven't been able to binge watch it, which is a shame, because I think
Hulu.
They're genius writers and comedic actors, and they also had a sketch comedy show called That Mitchell and Webb Look, which is David Mitchell and Robert Webb is their actual names, but it just really, I don't know, it's my kind of humor. If you haven't seen the show... And you like Comedy Bang Bang or anything like that. It's sort of like that in sense of humor, because it's a little irreverent. And you, like, they're comedy. They're a sketch comedy show. The actual sitcom show is just similar humor, but it's more of the unique style, because I haven't seen a show like that before where it's literally all from point of view.
Right.
And they never break that style. Sometimes they'll do point of view from other characters in the room, but they never go inside anyone else's head other than the two guys that the show's about. So I've been watching that. And then I've been working on some customs, but it's not important.
Great.
So what have we done this week?
Well, today was kind of a fun day.
Yeah, it was an interesting day.
It was. So I decided that we've not been taking advantage of living in Pittsburgh enough, because, like, we've been in the process of still sort of, like, settling in terms of, like, jobs. And, I mean, I've had, like, me personally, I've had a lot of, like, job upheaval. Mm-hmm. I've had, like, 3 different jobs since we moved here.
Yeah.
But I think now, like, we're both finally sort of settled into our pattern a little bit.
Yeah.
And we have a little bit of money, but, you know, I was still sort of focusing on trying to find free and cheap events in the Pittsburgh area.
And there were a ton.
There were so many. There were, like, weird art shows and, yeah, just a whole bunch of, like, crazy-looking stuff. But the thing we decided to do today... actually, let me go grab that postcard, because I want to get its actual title.
So, it's just, like, we were looking, or Hillary was looking for a bunch of things to do, and literally just typed in, like, free events in Pittsburgh. And somehow stumbled upon, what's it called?
The Pittsburgh Reptile Show and Sale.
Right. So, the only way I can describe it is it's almost like, I didn't know you could trade there.
You can trade snakes.
It's like a flea market / gun show /
salad bar.
Salad bar / pet store.
Yeah.
It's all of the, not like they're selling all of those things, but it's the atmosphere that you get when you walk in there. So it was $5 to enter, get your hand stamped with a cute little turtle, and then you go into on the outside it looks like a hotel.
I'm pretty sure it's a hotel.
Yeah, with like a dining hall and things like
that.
Yeah,
but it had like a conference room, basically, that was set up.
With all these tables and all these vendors, like private sellers, with Tupperware containers
Like the little plastic, like, takeout salad bar containers.
Filled with various reptiles and amphibians and...
in various sizes with various levels of venom.
Yeah.
Like, we walked in, and the first thing we saw was a chinchilla, guinea pigs, and bunnies, which was weird. Nice. And then I got sight of the other end of the table where they have just... a whole display. I don't know if we're doing it justice, of these plastic, like, Tupperware containers.
Yeah.
With, like, there was a frog trying to, like, push the lid off the top. There were, like, huge snakes coiled up to, like, just fit.
Yeah, like, in, like, literal, like, circular Tupperware containers where, the like, they sit inside it. Some of them were sealed with, like, tape and stuff to make it more secure.
But most of them were just, like, those push tabs.
Yeah,
like
if they really tried, they could probably bust through it.
Probably.
And some vendors had, like, glass cases where there were things like chameleons and lizards and geckos behind glass.
Yeah.
And, like, large boa constrictors, like, super huge, like... I said when we were in the car there were some as big as my arm, but I saw one that was, like, as thick as my leg.
Yeah.
Like, just coiled up for sale.
Yeah.
Like, and these aren't... a lot of them weren't cheap. There was very few that were under $100.
Yeah, and there were, like, little ones that were so expensive.
They were, like, 75 apiece.
Like, how do you get into this hobby?
Yeah.
Into this life? And the other thing is, so in addition to, like, the salad bar setup,
yeah.
there are also people just walking around
holding their
reptiles.
Purchases. like, one of them had a bearded dragon or something, like, on their
big
shoulder.
Big-ass motherfucking snakes.
Yeah, like...
but, like, we walked in, and I'm wearing, like, a sundress and sandals.
Yeah.
And... before we're even in the door, the guy comes out with, like, a huge snake,
yeah,
like,
just
wrapped around his arm.
Two of them actually had them.
There were two... oh, there two people.
Two
yeah,
people.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
No, two people that had two snakes. Like, one... ugh. Each had a snake wrapped around their hands. Like, oh, we're done for the day. We got our purchases.
And
like,
they were, like, 6 inches from us. Yeah, like, they walked very close. And, we're just,
and it's pretty cramped in there. I mean, like, it's a hotel...
it's not a big room.
...conference room or, like, a lunch dining hall type thing.
Yeah.
But, like... so there are a bunch of tables, like, the whole place is packed with the people selling their products and then the people there. There were a lot of people there
to,
like, buy.
It's like a shitty hotel.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So the carpet's grungy.
Yeah,
it's got, like, bad fluorescent lighting, you know, just to, you know, make you feel like you were there.
Right.
And these, like, plastic tables.
It's almost like the hotel from The Shining, just, you know, after a lot of years of being used.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they're just plastic tables set up with, like, tables upon tables of, like I said, like, snakes, chameleons, geckos, lizards, and then turtles.
Yeah.
But then there was also, like, and this was super sad to me, but there was, like, well, you're buying a snake or something, you're going to need to feed it. So there were just large containers of just a bunch of mice for, like, $1, $2
a
piece that you buy to feed your snake, and I just couldn't get past that.
Matt was so sad for so long.
Because it's like, I mean, I know how the food chain works. I know, like, the circle of life and all that shit. But to see it there is just like, oh, so people are buying, like, a bag full of mice cheap so they can feed their $200 snake.
Right.
And
like, then I started thinking about the bunnies, and I was like, are they supposed to be food? But
I think
they were fancy bunnies.
I think they were fancy bunnies, too. The ones that show bunnies on it.
Okay, and they were very soft.
Yeah.
Which should count for something.
Right. And then there were, like, all the insects and stuff that others eat.
There were also tarantulas.
Yeah, that
we
was...
did not go near that table.
Yeah, you wouldn't
I
let me.
Not do spiders.
Even in Tupperware containers.
Unsecured Tupperware containers. Like, you're worried about the snakes getting out? One of those spiders?
I was more worried about,
leg.
So, like, one of the draws to this is that if you're interested in buying anything, you can, like, almost try before you buy, where you can, like,
you can, like,
pick
it.
Up your purchase and, like, oh, I like how this snake looks, and, like, let it crawl over you. And a lot of people were doing that, but I'm like, how many customers... I know they're here for this, but how many customers drop their
somebody jumps
purchases?
And suddenly there's a venomous snake
yeah,
on the
just
floor,
slithering
like,
around, and they right. can move pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I don't know if they make them a little more docile for selling, but, like,
I
imagine at least one or two of them had been dropped.
Probably. And it would, like, it was just one of those places where, you know, if you feel something twitch on your ankle, just, like, don't look down.
Yeah,
like,
you can't look down. Otherwise,
like,
it's
probably
it's
nothing, but it might also be a tarantula that's about to end your life.
Yeah.
Like, I touched a couple of lizards.
Mm-hmm.
Matt didn't want to touch.
I didn't want to There were a few of them I didn't want to touch. I touched... It wasn't a snake. I think it was one of the geckos or something. Okay. I know I felt the backs of them. And the bunnies.
Oh, yeah. We touched the bunnies.
But, like, some of them were very, like, either nervous or excited or something. Where they were, like, wiggling around inside their containers. Some containers didn't even have lids.
Right, so you just reach in.
Yeah, you reach in and pet them or whatever. And, like, my whole thing was, like, I'm going to pet them. They're going to get the taste for human blood and be all over me in a matter of seconds.
And then you'll die.
Like that scene from Jurassic Park 2, The Lost World, where, like, Abruzzi is actually in that movie, so you have a point of reference from Prison Break.
I've also seen it. I just don't remember it.
You've seen two?
I've seen up to three, I think.
Huh. Yeah. And technically you saw Jurassic World.
I saw most of it, hotel. Yeah. But we were also dead.
Yeah. But anyway, there's a scene where, like, there's these little, like, they're called compies.
Okay.
They're just little dinosaurs. And, like, the movie opens with this rich family. Like, they've pulled up their yacht to the beach, and they're just enjoying a picnic or whatever. And then the little girl, like, has her sandwich, and she's, like, on the island. And there's, like, oh, I'll feed this little lizard thing, she thinks. And then she turns around and is like, check this out, parents. And then there's, like, more than one. And then they just attack her, and then the parents come running over, and it screams.
Right in the end.
Yeah, but Abruzzi also gets eaten by the same things later on in the movie. But anyway, that's what I thought would happen to me.
Right.
And then,
stuck your hand in.
Like, if I turned away from them, and I'd see the whole the box of mice, and then I'd get sad, and, like...
It was a lot for you.
It was a lot. It was interesting to go, and I'm glad we did it. It was only $5. And pay $5, and then if you want to spend money on the actual thing... I mean, it says right here on the thing, fun for the whole family. Like, see exotic pets and stuff. I didn't know you could buy, sell, and trade there. But the chameleon was super cool.
The chameleons were neat. There was one, I think it was a chameleon. The one that was out was, like, bright blue and orange. And, like, you know, if I was going to own...
I don't know what it was trying to blend in with.
You're right. If I was going to own a reptile, it would be some sort of lizard.
I would definitely like a chameleon.
Yeah, or a yellow-spotted lizard.
Yeah, we have to fashion the yellow spots.
Sure,
but
if we get a chameleon, we have to name it Karma.
Of course.
Karma, chameleon. Anyway.
They come and go.
All right.
All right.
So that was fun. We did that. And that was, like, one of those things that... We're pretty good at choosing our dates based on seeing something that's like, oh, that'd be so weird. We should totally do it. And then you just don't go. We'd go.
I mean, when we were on our road trip, we went to the Wax Museum instead of Mount Rushmore.
Right, because we saw Mount Rushmore from
the
distance.
It from the car, and we're like, that's it. We can't go up inside Roosevelt's nose.
It doesn't do anything, right.
Yeah.
You can't, like, you pay your $10 to park, and then you stare at it. And it was snowing and cold.
Yeah.
So then in Keystone, South Dakota, we found the Presidential Wax Museum.
Yeah.
That incidentally was also $10 to get in.
Yeah.
So
we'd rather do that than spend it on parking.
And it was amazing. And also, like, the dinosaur time trek thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, stuff like that.
Stuff like that would just... It looks super cool, and you're like, that would be fun to do, or, like, weird. And then you forget about it, or just don't, like, eh.
Right.
You can go to a movie or something. Boring.
Right. You don't find anyone that wants to go with you.
Right.
But
we try to do that shit.
Yeah, and that was super fun. And everyone there looked like they belonged at LizardCon.
Yeah,
basically.
It was basically a Comic-Con for, like, reptiles.
Right. So anyway, so that was neat. That was
they
today.
All had, like, tattoos and everything, and they're, like, super into their snakes and lizards. And then there were families, families that were selling...
Yeah.
Lizards and snakes and stuff, because they were little kids at the table,
oh,
this is my snake, and, like, if
you
want
it. Good for them.
Just, it's a fascinating subculture that you don't know exists.
I would love to do an anthropological study on that subculture.
Totally.
It'd be fascinating. But it also, like, walking out, like, in the parking lot, there were a lot of people, and it sort of felt like being back in West Virginia.
A little bit. Because it does, there's, like, it's almost the same... like a farm type feeling where like you raise livestock and then sell them off at auction or whatever.
Well,
but like
being a little meaner than that.
No, I know, but that's sort of like the country style type atmosphere it is, because everyone's brought these various reptiles from home where they've either bred them or they just collect them or weird shit
that.
But then they sell them to other people that are exactly like that.
Right.
It's just fascinating because like, quote-unquote normal person would go to a pet store and buy a snake or something, but there's a lizard
con
that's just, like, all dedicated. And, yeah, it's not just, like, an annual thing. Like, come see our lizards. But it's from 9 a.m. to 3, and then it's like, once a month.
Yeah. Yeah, there's 12 in a year.
12 in a year, yeah.
It's crazy. There was also a fudge table.
Yeah, there was randomly, like, next to the first table we walked in on, right, with the snakes and, like, the frogs, there was, buy some fudge.
I meant to get fudge, just because I wanted to be able to say I bought fudge at the lizard show, but...
I also, there was some places that were selling, like, spiced pretzel mixes.
Yeah, you could sample them, right next to the snakes, and I was like, I'm okay, I don't need that.
But we literally walked into the bigger room, and I was like, this is like a salad bar of snakes.
Yeah.
Because, like, people were in lines, like, walking along the table, almost picking out Tupperware containers of what they wanted.
It was wild.
And then they'd pay at the end.
It was absolutely insane, and I'm so glad we did it.
Yeah, no, it was one of those things that, yeah, you have to see to believe, like... Right. Super cool.
So anyway.
Yeah.
So we've also been watching Buffy.
Yeah, yeah.
We've been, because we have Hulu. Mm-hmm.
It's way easier to watch.
Yeah, and Buffy is on Hulu, thank God. So what have you, what are your impressions of the latest round of Buffy?
So I'm glad it has more of a, like a plot.
Yeah, we're on season 3, by the
season
way.
Season 3, yeah. Because we're still switching back between that and Doctor Who.
Right.
Which I
and we
know.
Took a sizable break from both of them.
Yeah, because we were in the transition of moving, and it was easier to just not set up the computer and all that.
Right.
So I do like that it has a plot now. I was interested at first. The plot device that they threw in there was that there was another Slayer called, and that Slayer happens to be Eliza Dushku.
Yeah.
Which I call Duck Shoot because of Kevin Smith. Because she's in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. But Joss Whedon also uses her for a few things.
Quite a bit, yeah.
But, so she's the Slayer that, like, is a loner and doesn't have any friends or family, but knows, like, she's badass and wants to kill kill and all this other stuff. Like, almost, in some ways, the antithesis to Buffy.
Yeah.
Because Buffy is this, like... Even though she is a Slayer, that she knows, like, this is what she has to do, she never loses being the teenage girl that she is in high school.
Right.
Like, she has those moments where, like, she wants to go shopping or, like, just hang out with her friends.
Yeah.
And, like, sometimes she's like, oh, I can't do that because I'm a Slayer, and real dramatic about it.
Yes.
Other times she's like, no, I'm fucking going to my prom. Like, this is what I want to do. And that I find super cool because that's genuine. Like, that's sincere, and I dig that.
Yeah, but he's a great character.
Duck Shoot comes in and is just
Faith is
is her character name. I would love it if they called
Duck
her Duck Shoot
the Slayer. Duck Shoot the Vampires.
Yeah. And she's like, she doesn't really get it the way Buffy gets it, whereas, like, she doesn't know how to be a person.
Mm-hmm.
She does what she wants when she wants.
And we've seen that from both of the other Slayers that we saw.
Yeah, yeah.
Kendra had no personal life.
But the thing with Kendra was, like, it was more about tradition and heritage.
Yeah, that's true.
Than it was, this is what I was destined to, like, I see, Destiny even makes it sound too flowery for Faith's character.
Faith thinks she's above the law.
Yeah.
And she is...
She's like a vigilante, like the Punisher, where she can just bust heads and not give a shit about the consequences.
Right. See, and, want, take.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's Faith's
no matter
motto.
What it is. Yeah. And you see it throughout her entire run. And, I mean, we're not done with her character. But, like, then there's this whole... Spoilers, but there's this whole part where, like, she's trying to be on Buffy's side and, like, try to be, you know, a person as well as a Slayer. But immediately diverts from that and goes into... Well, fuck Buffy and her friends. I'm gonna do what I want for myself. And, like, turns on the whole group. And, like, so much to the point where she tries to turn Angel back into...
Angelus.
The evil, like, basically the original version.
Right. Before...
Well, that's the other thing, is, like, Angel was once a person.
But then you got turned into a vampire, which means losing your soul.
Completely.
Yeah, so that's Angelus. But then Angelus killed the wrong person, and there's a... Racist, but there's a gypsy curse put on him that basically gave him his soul back.
Well,
so that
what is
suffer.
The correct term?
I think Romani, but the issue... I mean, the issue with that isn't necessarily the term. Mm-hmm. It's that...
The association?
Yeah. The stereotype.
Okay.
But...
So, well, no. The stereotype that, like, yes, when you call somebody a gypsy, you obviously you conjure an image in your head of what you've been... not bred to believe, but like that you sort of think of what a gypsy is with like hoop earrings and a bandana and all that shit. But like, what would have been the term? Like, what did they go by?
I think they called themselves the Romani.
The Romani?
I think.
Just, I'm curious.
Yeah, and like, I don't know a lot about the
correct term.
And Romani might only be a certain
group in like a certain like, geographical location.
Yeah, I think it was sort of. I want to say an Eastern European, like, subset. So it was probably a lot of different groups.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
No, so I just, I was curious.
Yeah, Angelus, evil, then gets cursed with this soul so that he has to feel the pain of all of the people that he's killed. But it makes him...
The angel that...
That Buffy falls in love with.
Yes. and, like, basically the only good vampire that exists.
Right.
Like... So far, I'm sure.
no spoilers.
No. But, well, I know spoilers, but Spike sort of not becomes good, but like...
I'm not saying anything else about Spike.
I know there are other good vampires.
Spike is one of my favorite characters, so...
But, so then, you know, there's a whole other plot in season two where Angel gets his soul taken away again, and he becomes Angelus. Actually, it's when he sleeps with Buffy.
Yeah, the moment of true happiness.
The moment of true happiness. He basically gives his soul to her.
He just loses his soul.
Well, I mean, like, that's basically what happens, though, is because...
But she doesn't have it.
Yeah, but your soul isn't a tangible thing anyway. So it's like the act of lovemaking because they're two souls combined into one... It doesn't matter.
Not the point.
He becomes Angelus again and is a real dick.
Right, and then shit ensues and he gets his soul back. Yeah, but Faith goes so far as to try to remove Angel's soul again.
Yeah.
And make him this vicious killer.
Yeah.
Like, Angelus was one of the particularly awful vampires.
Right, to get not only, like, him away from Buffy because she thinks that she's better than Buffy and is pissed at Buffy because Buffy thinks she's better than her.
It's very teenage.
Yeah, but, like, it's true. Buffy is 100 times better than Faith is.
In every way.
But then there's also, like, the mayor, who's this demon. Is he a demon? Or he just has demon powers? Fine. He is immortal and other shit and is trying to ascend and become the whole almighty ruler of whatever hell, the Hellmouth. And... by extension the Earth. So Faith like teams up with him and brings in Angel to like do some dirty work to kill Buffy and all this other shit to keep her out of the way so that the mayor can ascend. But spoilers, they were all playing a trick on Faith.
Right. Just to get the information
that they needed. And Angel never really turned back into Angelus, and like it creates some animosity between him and Buffy, because it was like he had to act like he was Angelus, who was like making out with Faith, and I think they even slept together.
I don't think they did.
No?
No.
Okay. Well, it seemed like it was implied, but...
No.
Okay. That might have been too far, but Faith wouldn't have stopped.
No, but he would have.
Yeah, I know, but in the terms of being fully undercover...
Right, but I think that everyone in this world is sort of under the impression that it wasn't just sex with Buffy that lost him his soul, it's just sex.
Yeah, but if Faith didn't think that he had a soul, I'm just saying.
You'd pick the tiniest details.
But it makes a big difference.
They didn't have sex.
Okay. That we know of.
They didn't have sex.
Alright. Fine, but anyways, so... Season 3 is infinitely better than the rest. I'm just sad that, you know, Oz, played by Seth Green, still is living in this, like, weird limbo where they're not utilizing his character, and I don't know what problems they had with him as an actor. I know I read something online where it's like, he didn't want to... Like, I think he was written only a few lines, and he didn't want to come do like extensive shooting for only the few bits that he had. So it was like equal parts, like, you're bringing me in as a regular character, why not utilize me more? But you can also see it in his character, his acting. He's just phoning it in these lines. He never really emotes, and they make it sort of part of his character. But pretty sure when he's introduced, he's much more expressive.
Yeah, I mean, the way he falls for Willow is just so genuine. Sweet, and like, she deserves someone like that. It makes us so happy. I think from the things that I have learned about Joss Whedon recently, I wanted... And this is just conjecture, but my guess would be that part of the issue is that Joss Whedon didn't necessarily know what to do with boys. Buffy, like, the whole show there, all of these strong female characters, and I think it was because Joss Whedon was more involved with the girls on the show.
Yeah.
And to, I don't know, nothing come out in any particular way other than that his marriage fell apart.
Right.
And then Xander is clearly just written almost as a Joss Whedon stand-in.
Yeah.
As the nerdy guy with the quippy jokes who never gets the girl.
Right.
The problem is that upon rewatching, Xander is an asshole.
Xander is an asshole from moment one.
Xander's the worst, and I hate him.
I got really pissed off at him from the beginning.
Several times, because he just keeps very nearly fucking everything up. And it's sort of in this vein of, I'm the nice guy, and I'm trying to do the nice thing, but she doesn't want to have sex with me, and it hurts my feelings, so therefore I'm justified.
And his character feels very 90s. Like, I've said it before, where it's like, when you're watching Friends, Chandler is... somewhat this type, but he grows a lot over time, and he's also, I've had this conversation with other people, because like, when I watched Friends back in the day, I identified as Chandler, because,
and a lot of people do,
because he's the funny guy that like, you know, is not the cool one, like Joey's dumb, but he like, he is able to date, and like, people consider him good looking, and even beyond that, but so, like, Chandler himself is sort of, like, a background character, where it's, like, he's always... Yeah, I mean, even Ross gets to go out with Rachel.
Fuck Ross.
Like, Chandler doesn't get Monica until, like...
season four?
Maybe, but, like, later. The tail end of season four, because I don't think they start until season five, like...
Okay.
Where it's, like, they know that we know, and all that other
my
shit.
My favorite episode.
Yeah.
Xander just feels more malicious.
Very malicious, and like, even the whole, there's a whole argument where like, they're figuring out what to do with Angel.
Yeah.
And he's like, I told you this would happen, and like, you shouldn't do this, and he's at, like, his argument is not illogical, but at the heart of it, it's like, he's only mad because Buffy didn't choose him over Angel.
Right. It's this whole friend zone kind of thing that is just so toxic.
And it continues for so long. Even when, you know, that Willow and Xander have their, like, weird fling thing where, like, Willow loves Oz.
Yeah, but, like,
but
Willow...
Willow was in love with Xander at one point.
Right, from her standpoint, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
And Xander wants what he can't have.
Right.
So he has Cordelia, and Willow, for the first time, has someone else, and so is not all about Xander.
Yeah.
So that's when he starts to notice her, and because she was in love with him for so long, of course
she responds to it. It was super easy for him to, or for her to
fall
for that.
Yeah, and she knows it's wrong, but this is boy who she's been in love with for some god-awful reason.
Yeah, but Xander, who has been in love with Buffy and, like, pushed Willow aside and was like, I just like you as a friend and all that other stuff, ends up with the popular girl, the main cheerleader.
Yeah,
and then,
head cheerleader, I think that's what they call it.
Whatever. And then not immediately, like, they have a I hate you type relationship.
Right.
And then they make out after hating each other, and then they're almost like, they never make fun of each other. Yeah, even while they're actively dating and, like, people know about their relationship.
Right.
Like, they never go out of their way to, like, say nice things to one another.
And it makes Cordelia more bearable, more likable, because she's sacrificing a great deal of things that are important to her to be with him.
Because she's definitely, like, the shallow character.
Yeah.
But she almost puts that aside to, like, be with Xander because that's, for some reason, she even says, like, for some reason, I'm drawn to you, and so we're just gonna see this thing through.
And you're talking about character growth. Like,
yeah.
From season one, we cannot stand Cordelia the whole time.
I
like, But she matures noticeably. And Xander just doesn't.
I'm not seeing any maturity.
I watched Buffy for the first time in college before I became a feminist. Like, this is the first rewatch since I've, you know, become this person. And, yeah, Xander is very difficult to stomach. And he stays the whole time and is part of the Scooby gang, you know, like, a sympathetic character the whole time.
Well, I'm sure if I had watched it earlier in my life, I would have thought the same thing. Like, oh, it's just this guy, he's in love with Buffy, and, like, he's not catching a break. I probably would have identified with him if I was younger.
I think I excused his behavior.
Yeah.
So
I mean, we all do. Yeah. But...
but it's toxic.
Knowing what I know now and just, like, how I think now...
Right.
He's a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, and this narrative that keeps getting pushed, like, it's not doing anybody any favors. That's how we end up with, you know, boy gets rejected, boy brings gun to school and shoots 10 women, like...
Right.
you should have just gone on a date with him. Okay, but I didn't want to. Yeah. Like,
it's not my fault. He shouldn't have brought a fucking gun to school.
Right. A does not equal B. Right.
And, like, that's the problem with a lot of 90s stuff. And I mean, luckily, television now is becoming more progressive.
Yes.
And trying to actively. Like, I mean, they canceled Roseanne immediately.
Yeah. That was amazing.
That show.
It was fucking quick.
I watched a lot of it back in the day, more so when it was on, like, TV Land or Nick at Night or something. But I watched it for John Goodman because I like him as an actor.
Okay.
But the show very much stays in that time that it was created.
Mm-hmm.
And then even, like, early 2000s when we were sort of pulling away, like, it was still very prominent in television to, like, make the I hate my wife jokes and things like that. I mean, you see it in, like, Everybody Loves Raymond and, like, all of the TBS shows that came out, King of Queens and things like that. But, like, that show tried to come back recently, and I didn't watch it because I had no absolute interest in it, because I was like, they can't really do that show anymore, because that show exists in a certain time. Like, if you, it's like if you tried to bring back The Honeymooners, which I know you haven't seen, but it's like one of the reoccurring jokes. I mean, they do the whole, like, my marriage is awful, and they, like, made the Flintstones sort of patterned off of that. Like, the,
I hate that.
I know, like, but the main joke that was always it became like a catchphrase was like, zip, zoom, straight to the moon, where basically he was threatening to beat his wife.
Oh my god.
And like, one of these days, Alice, I'm gonna knock you for a loop and shit like that. And like, that was what they funny. And the Honeymooners, like, eventually outgrew,
you know, eventually,
and then
we stopped thinking
the Flintstones, but they didn't beat, like, the Flintstones was at least a cartoon for kids, so,
right,
like, they
weren't,
but they did a lot of marriage jokes where it's like, I can't be with my wife and shit like that, or like, the husband is useless,
right?
And like, that humor has sort of kept going for so many years, but evolving with the times and things like that, to where now we have shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine and things like that, where we don't get that humor at all.
And I mean, even like Riverdale, for as over
ridiculous
as it is, like, I told you, the Veronica Betty Archie thing gets resolved within the first episode.
Well, I asked you, like, so, like, that's the biggest problem that they have, is, like, he can't decide, but, like, you're more like, yeah, Betty and Veronica are gonna end up sleeping together.
Oh, yeah, they're, like, best friends for a minute.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah.
It's perfect. Yeah, but I'll talk about that later. But, yeah, I mean, the thing with Buffy is, like, for the 90s, it was a very big deal that we have this female protagonist who is kicking ass single-handedly and still going to her prom. So she's still, like, exhibiting traditional femininity, but she is someone who you're not fucking with.
Right.
And it's so, so, so cool. Like, Buffy is always going to have a special place in my heart, but...
And a lot of fans, like, a lot of... I mean, it's a cult classic.
Exactly. But
a
the thing that, like, the smart fans... will keep in mind, and what I'm sure you'll learn as you, you know, watch the whole thing, is that it is of its time.
Yeah,
like,
no, I
for now, it has a lot of problems. It was very cool for
I don't
what
know
it
when it started.
I want to say
96?
Something
somewhere
like
in there, but
yeah.
It goes on for 9 seasons, so it
seven.
Definitely 7 seasons,
yeah.
Sorry. Don't know why I said nine. But it carries on into the early 2000s.
Yeah. And Joss Whedon just didn't really develop as an past the mid-90s.
I mean, you can kind of see it, yeah, in his humor and stuff, even with Avengers and, like, Justice League. Like, you can tell Joss Whedon's humor. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, somebody went as far as to cut the Justice League trailer into a Buffy-style, like, credit sequence. Because, like, he does have a certain style, and to his credit, I mean, Cabin in the Woods, as smart as that movie was, like, you can definitely look at it and be like, that's Joss Whedon.
Yes, it's and very recognizable.
It's not a bad thing, but...
No, because, like, I mean, Firefly's great. Yeah, yeah. Dollhouse, we loved. Yeah. Like, but, yeah, it's not versatile.
It's one thing to introduce, like, these strong female characters, but then to not develop anything else, it's almost going too far in that direction.
Right.
Because, like you said, he doesn't spend a lot of time on the guys. Like,
yeah, there's the ones that are the Joss Whedon stand-in.
Yeah.
And then, like, Oz could have been so cool.
Yeah.
And the one time we get, like, sort of a glimpse of just how cool he could be is, like, in the alternate universe where none of the rest of them are fighting evil.
Yeah,
but Oz is with Giles. Like, he's driving the van to go kill vampires.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, Oz could have been really, really neat. And if anything, like, his interaction and his love of Willow shows us that. But, like...
And I'm not saying, like, you know, even though I say it's almost going too far in the other direction, it's fine because there hadn't been a lot of stuff like that before.
Right.
Like, a lot, I mean, almost all of media is male-centric.
Yeah.
With the male protagonists, and, like, that was the whole reason Kevin Smith was like, I want to make Yoga Hosers where there are female protagonists saving the world, because there's no movies out there like that for women at all, and, like... I mean, that's why Black Panther was such a big deal, because, like, the team that's basically protecting Black Panther, like, is a whole team of women.
Yeah.
Like, badass, the general, like, all of them.
And we talked about that, because we rewatched Black Panther recently.
Yeah.
And, like, it would have been so easy to just make that movie about, like, African-American pride and
power.
Right,
to focus
on
that one thing.
And that would have been totally acceptable. But what they also did was, it's not just... You know, it's not just women, it's black women that are taking just the front center stage of this movie.
And what we found out in, like, the featurettes and whatnot, because we bought the DVD, was that, like, that's how the comic book is written.
Yeah.
Like, it's rooted in that. It's not like they added that to the movie to make it cooler or more progressive.
I mean, like,
it's
the Dora Milaje are, like, you know, canonically all female warriors.
And that's super cool.
Yeah,
and, like,
it's amazing. And Shuri is the next Black Panther.
Yeah.
Like,
if we could just, combine what we know now to... the mistakes of the past, and, like, if Joss Whedon could take strong female characters and flesh out his male protagonists and, like, make a story that's, like, strong females at the center, but, like,
make a story that feels complete.
Yeah, like, real.
Yeah, and the other, I mean, we'll talk about Tara and Willow when we get there,
but
there are some issues with representation.
I'm sure.
As well, and, like,
I don't know what research he did to get those points.
Right.
But it's the same thing, like, you watch Chasing Amy.
Yes.
And although Kevin Smith, you know, a white, straight male, wrote that movie, he did, you know, he didn't just, like, take what he thought lesbianism was in the 90s and, like, try to assimilate it to a man with insecurities. He, like, looked to his peers that were fitting in those categories or, like, would look at it. I mean, he's had... a lot of his movie, he tries to whip a little, like, same-sex stuff in there. Because representation's important.
Works.
Like,
yeah.
It's, and it's also, yeah, like, you pick a group of 10 people, I mean...
Right.
Or a group of 100 people, like, maybe half of them are women, and then half of that half are gay, and, like...
Yeah.
All that other stuff. Like, it's a good sample of the population. Like,
yeah, and I mean, you know, we have this
It's unrealistic to make it all white men fighting to save the world.
Yeah, all straight
white men.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and that was, like, one of my more heartbreaking moments in, like, this journey towards, like, being a feminist was realizing that the Avengers, a 2.5-hour movie, does not pass the Bechdel test.
Yeah.
So... you know, let alone adding people of color, because Avengers is a white man movie.
Yeah.
And it's so sad. Like, granted, you know, we do start getting representation moving forward from there. But...
Right. And that's the... Because I was lucky enough to get a free trial to Stitcher, and Kevin Smith moved all of his backlog of podcasts to Stitcher Premium, so you needed to pay to get them. Not that his current podcasts aren't free, but they're only free for, like, the first 6 months because it costs money to keep them on for free and shit like that. So the servers and things, he couldn't hold them on, like iTunes and things like that, without costing more than it was worth. So he put them all on Stitcher Premium, and I've been downloading past episodes and things. Mm-hmm. But they talk about... I lost my train of thought because I threw that explanation in. We were talking about representation and superhero movies. Oh, they were talking about, so like, people, they were talking about introducing like a black character, like, I want to say they said like a black Batman or something like that as their... And people were getting mad because, like, Bruce Wayne's white and, like, all this other stuff.
Right.
Or, like, Iron Man. Well, yes, but not... definitely a point, but not the point I'm trying to make.
Okay.
But, like, all this other stuff. Like, you can't change who the characters are. And maybe that's the problem that Marvel was facing at the time.
Maybe.
Because not only did they already establish that all of these characters are white, and, like, Tony Stark and all this other stuff, but they're using material source... that they're canonically white.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I mean, we do have black characters like War Machine and Falcon and Black Panther even.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't make Black Panther white.
That would have been so bad. Oh my God.
That would have been like like Marvel would have been done.
Yeah.
But like in that episode of the Smodcast that I was listening to, Kevin Smith was like, why not have, like, a black Batman? Because, like, not only does it change... Like, even if you want to keep, like, the, you know, the origin story the same, but just having the representation there, like, it doesn't shit on any past versions of Batman. Like, if Adam West or Christian Bale, for that matter, are your versions of Batman, and that's how you like Batman, you've watched those, and you're like, that's who Batman is to me. That's fine. Those exist already.
Right, has their Batman.
Yeah, if you introduce a black Batman, it doesn't shit on your childhood of what Batman was. And, like, they even if you change the character of Batman to gear it more towards, like, if an African-American lost their parents in an alley or something like that, and, like, maybe they weren't rich because you're invoking, like, the actual social and economic classes of that character and, like, changing a little bit of the origin story, but you at least have the representation on how an African-American Batman would exist in this world that Gotham is and things like that. Like, they went into some really cool places, and I'm pretty sure the episode's called Black Batman Begins if you want to listen to it. But, like, it's that idea of, like, representation matters. Also, changing what a character was doesn't erase that character completely. So, like, if Marvel finishes with their series of movies and, like, that's the end for them, and then some years go by, we haven't had any superhero movies for, like, 10, 15, 20 years.
Right.
If they want to start the Marvel universe over again, like, start rebooting movies,
make
Tony Stark black, or make Thor black.
Make Captain America black.
Make Captain America black woman.
Like,
you can do anything. They're all made-up stories.
In the comics, one of the latest Captain Americas is a Muslim woman.
Oh.
She has a hijab.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I know that in one of the newer runs of Iron Man, it's a black teenage girl.
Okay.
That is like a Shuri type,
right.
Sort of. She's super intelligent, and she's Iron Man.
Yeah.
But it's that idea of, like, we're past the point. There's so many straight white male stories out there. Like,
get over it.
Just stop. Like,
yeah.
Even as a straight white male myself, I'm tired of seeing it.
Right. White, like, people do not need more representation.
Yeah. And
I'm
not really trying to be political. I'm just trying to be, like, try to be original.
Right.
Like,
tell an interesting story.
Like, I'm not the only person that exists in the world. I don't want to see stories just that, like, I relate to enough stories. I have all, like, those movies to watch and listen to and read, and, like, I don't need them. It's boring at this point. Like, I would have loved it if the Avengers was, like, a racially diverse cast of characters, like, from all over the world that they assemble and, like, fucking stop Thanos from,
and, like, the cosplays of, like, young African-American children dressing up, like, as either the Dora Milaje or as Black Panther. Like, it's,
like,
so
I don't know what ad it was, but it was, like, for the costumes or something like that. But it was, like, now, instead of seeing a bunch of white kids on the box of, like, whatever the toy is or whatever, you can see that they're interested, and they have representation, so they can put on the Black Panther suit and Wakanda forever and all that shit. Like, it's so cool
it's
to see.
It's so cool.
Like, I mean, we were saying with Moana, the fact that Moana's not only Polynesian is the race, not only is the character, like, that Polynesian race and, like, the ancient, like, somewhat goes into heritage and things like that, but it's also, she's voiced by a
Like a 14-year-old Native Hawaiian girl.
Yeah.
Like, it's so cool.
Yeah, it matters. And like,
it really, really
does. We're two straight white people saying that. So imagine what people who haven't had the representation are thinking. Like, just fucking do it. Like, there's
From a storyteller standpoint,
yeah,
do that. Because it changes the narrative.
Yeah.
It changes the story that you're telling.
I mean, honestly, as much as you hate Batman, I think you would find it far more interesting.
I would go see a Black Batman movie
in
a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Especially if you rewrote the character to actually take that into account.
Yeah, yeah. Because it changes how he interacts with the world.
Just changing,
or how
the
world interacts with him
a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you keep the things that make him Batman. But
yeah.
Just twist it a little and see what happens.
Right. Like, I mean, again, I'm currently sort of writing that Batman story that we've talked about.
Yeah.
It takes that idea, but because I can't tell an African-American story, I'm not even going to touch one. But I take the idea of Batman, keep a lot of the basic elements the same, but just take out that fact that he has money, because one of the things I love about the character of Batman and all these Elseworld comics and shit like that, or alternate universes and things like that, is that at the core, Bruce Wayne is always Batman, because there's always something that's calling him to fight for justice and shit like that.
Right.
So if the one thing you take away from him is that he didn't have money, so he couldn't take on the world with the arsenal that he has.
Yeah, so then how does he
he becomes a survivalist living in on the streets of Gotham City as homeless and like eventually stumbles into Alfred, so that you at least have that through line, and like creates his bat cave in like the junkyard of Gotham City and things like that.
Right.
Make him more real, and like, so it's just an interesting perspective to tell a story.
Right.
But like, white people aren't the only people that have stories to tell.
Yeah, and outside of the storytelling component.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's been proven again and again and again that representation is so important.
Yeah.
And then it comes down to, well, there's a lot to unpack with representation.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, it leads to different outcomes. If people can see themselves presented in different ways, like, then you get people trying to live up to those images.
Totally.
And it leads to a better, more universal society.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we went off on quite a tangent.
I know,
there.
But it was good.
It was a good one.
It was organic.
It was a
and
good
real.
Conversation.
Yeah, up top.
All right. I think
that was a solid episode.
I think so too. Yeah. Like, I could keep going forever, but I also would like to eat ice cream and watch Buffy. So.
Fair enough. All right, so I am your host, Matthew the Dr. Danko.
And I'm Hillary Crum, the co-host.
Thank you for tuning in to this week of Why Did Not You Warn Me? We're actually going to post on time, and this isn't a two-parter, so enjoy that. Bye! Once the show ends, please don't shed those tears. We'll come back again, so have no fear. Oh, we told you that it just might end up this way. What's the show called again? You cannot be saying, why didn't I you warn me?